Matthew 6, 22. Remember the song that John wrote, The Archer. God has shot us away because the earth is spinning. He shot us away from the target in terms of how we see it. Now, the only way that you will hit the target is to abandon yourself. Give no thought. Because he has, just like a guided missile, an inertial guidance system within that's automatic that causes the target to be hit. Now, you find that almost impossible to believe in your day-to-day lives. Because the moment that something comes upon you that is something that you feel is trying to hurt you or trying to get you, or then you feel like you have to take the action to prove yourself worthy or to make yourself better or to do all of those kinds of things. Now, whenever you do that, whenever you take your life back, then God's inertial guidance system has to shut off because you have the wrong covering. God is no longer your covering. Your mind is your covering. And so you take it back and you do it in the name of worry or concern or planning or prudence or wisdom or whatever else you take it back by. And you take your life back into your own hands and the inertial guidance system is shut off and you're on your own. You have to find your way through this maze of time and space by yourself. That's not very smart. And then God has a mystery way. The moment you say, Father, forgive me, and abandon yourself again, you've moved through time, but this abandonment of self or repentance brings you back exactly to the point where you would have been had you not abandoned yourself. You understand me? It's the most sophisticated missile guidance system that has ever been designed or made. In other words, there is no power on the face of the earth or in the spirit that can disrupt, even if at the last minute they're saying, Father, I'm sorry, and the target's way over here and you're on the other side of the earth. The moment before time ends, if you say, Father, forgive me, you're back on the target. You understand me? It's pretty neat stuff. That's why the first requirement, back to basics, of a disciple is that you abandon yourself, pick up your cross, and you will follow him. Now, you all know this. You know, we've talked about it so many times that it's become cliché to you. And God then has given us a million metaphors to show that one truth. Now, you know, Tina and Brenda are here and relatively new, and so the big concern is, well, what am I going to do? What about this? What about that? Well, it's not just Tina and Brenda, but they're easy to pick on right now. What am I going to do? What about this? What about that? See, because you all secretly believe, down in the core of your being, you believe that God helps those that help themselves.
Yeah. The chapter of Ben Franklin.
That's first Ben Franklin. Ben Franklin's one that wrote that.
That's hilarious.
But that's what you believe. That's why that cliche has lasted, because everybody believes it. But it's exactly wrong. But it shows you that the reason the human mind accepted that as a cliche, and it's become a positive, practical thing and is passed down to each generation, is because everybody's mind already believes it. It doesn't matter if you're in a Muslim, a Catholic, a Protestant, a Jew, a Hindi, whatever it is that you think you believe, your basic belief system as you, as a hunk of protoplasm, is God helps those that help themselves. Now, we are of those who have said that's a lie. That's a big lie, as Melinda would say. Big lie, big lie. Well, what the hell do we do then? Our mind says, if I don't help myself, no one else will. Our parents say it. If I don't take this into my hands, then no one else will. Because if you lived by what you've heard me preach for all this time, the bottom line, basic, down in the deep, dark secret of your closet thinks that you'd sit in a corner and die. Right?
Right.
So I've got to help. And your mind is very selective. You've spent a lifetime helping, and you've always messed up. You've spent a lifetime taking your life in your hands, and you always fail. But your mind doesn't remember that. Your mind thinks, okay, that was just then. I've got it together now. Now this time I'll get it right. And it comes in terms of projects. It comes in terms of, it really comes lately with regard to being spiritual. You really believe, see, that you know, that God started this thing in the spirit, you can accept that. But now I gotta perfect it in the flesh. I gotta get this thing under control.
Like God started a snowball and you try to help it down, but instead, you know, like in the cartoons, you incorporated in the snowball and you just have legs and arms sticking out and you're rolling down the hill.
That's right.
Stump at the bottom.
Now, am I communicating? Do you understand me? That there is something fundamental about you that defines the necessity to, whenever you're confronted by a situation which you don't like, you got to help out. And if you happen to be among the fortunate ones who really don't have any problems right now, you really think, well, that's strange. There must be something wrong.
Yeah. God says, stick around. Got all of this.
And so you really don't believe, you semi-hope. We gotta get this together. I mean, I gotta take care of my cats.
That's a nice way to say it.
God, he's picking on me. So much of the shit he's talking about was talking about this morning. God.
Well, what if
it's... Or I've got to be responsible now. I've got to say spiritual stuff. Oh, shit, I can't do this. Or, you know, whatever. I becomes always the subject of the sentence. Okay, now, we're getting to a point. That's all a preamble. Matthew 6, 22. The light of the body is the eye. If therefore thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. Now, what does it mean for your eye to be single? Really mean. I mean, let's get down to where you live. What does it mean for your eye to be single? The way it's manifested is that you see the same target that God sees. That's what a single eye is. Okay? The way it comes out in terms of how you practice it is that you always know it's finished. You always know there's nothing left for you to do. You understand me? At every point of the test, at every single point of your life, whether it has to do with health, whether it has to do with emotional impact, whether it has to do with your relationship with others, you always know that it's finished. And that's what, because you have your eye on the one and same end result as God. And then in that same process, you know that God, as it says many times, God will perform that which he has appointed for you to do. Now,
I get lost on the result, the target,
okay,
the end.
Just what does end mean to you?
I know what I don't know, which is I don't know where we're going. I don't know what we're doing. I don't have any idea where we're going or what we're doing.
Well, then I have misspoke. The end is to be transfigured.
I've heard that and heard it and heard it, but I'm not experienced.
And no, because once you've experienced it, once you've tasted it, all that most of you have done is seen that there is a light in the dark place. And that's enough. But that's, okay, the light somehow to you was appealing. You may not have understood the light. You may not be able to articulate the light. You not may be able to understand how to get there from here. But something, when you saw that light, when I was held hostage, I was overwhelmed by the blackness of the hopelessness of it. You know, at the end. I mean, I knew I was going to die. And when I knew I was going to die, and I accepted that death, then I saw the light clearly. Now, that's a biggie. I mean, that's a major, big-time biggie. You know, I was so wild with this crew that we were with, and people, like, you know, they'd get in these great discussions about what they were going to do and stuff, and I say, yeah, and then you're going to die. And then you have these great plans. But this is what I'm going to do, and this is what we're going to do, and then we're going to do this and this and this, and I said, yeah, and then you're going to die. And what is it? What is the end? What is this single eye? What is the single eye that says if you have it, everything else is taken care of? If you don't have it, even that which you have is darkness. So it says, if thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. If thine eye be evil, and as we've talked about before, that means, the translation should say, if thy eye be double, thy whole body shall be full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in thee be darkness, how great is that darkness? I mean, that sounds like a pretty important kind of thing. If thine eye is single, the light of the body is the eye. The word for eye in the Hebrew, it means a fountain. It's a fountain in the desert. How do you get a single eye? The light of the body is the eye. If thine eye be single, thy whole body is full of light. In other words, the glory of God has filled the temple. How do you get the single eye? That's what all meditation is about. That's what all of these people are trying to do in the New Age movement. They're trying to get a single eye. How do you get a single eye? Well, if you believe Ramtha, you get channeled some way. If you believe Maharishi, you meditate and chant in a certain way. If you believe Timothy Leary, you take drugs. If you believe Shirley MacLaine, you get reincarnated.
I mean, first you pay $1,500, then you get
it. If you believe you, if you were articulate enough in your own mishmash of philosophy.
That's what I was thinking. You'd do lots of stuff.
If you do what you would do, it's what? Why do you get the single eye? Well, I go to Bible study. That's how you get the single eye. That's the ticket. Or don't piss off the rabbi. That's how you get a single eye.
That's how you get a black eye.
Some of you felt it last night. Okay, the question is, how do you get a single eye? Does that sound? Huh?
We watched Amadeus the other night, and it was this great thing in there where this guy Salieri, who's sort of a devil kind of a figure, he's a child and he's praying. The kid is praying to God to make him a great composer. He says, if you'll make me a great composer and if you will let me be famous, then I will write music that will glorify you. And to do it, I will dedicate my chastity and my industry to you. And I really identified with that guy, the idea of being chaste, of following rules of behavior and industry, of working real hard at some amorphous thing to get, to keep a deal with God and to get something. And I think part of it is a single eye. At least it's what I think a single eye is. Because I say, why can't I remember what you remember? Why can't I always do this? Why can't I always do that? If I had this, then I could do that. And I keep trying to behave and work.
Fortunately for us, Jesus explained how you get a single eye in the rest of the chapter, so I don't have to worry about it.
We should have read ahead.
Yeah, probably should have read ahead, but he wouldn't have known what it meant, so.
Yeah.
Okay. 22. The light of the body is the eye. That's a declarative sentence. Fact. If therefore thine eye be single, the whole body shall be full of light. If thine eye be double, thy whole body shall be full of darkness. If therefore the light, that which you call light, that is in thee, is darkness, is really darkness, how great is that darkness? Now we come to something. No man can serve two masters. Two masters are the two eyes. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other.
It's like trying to see independently too.
Right. There's no reason that God couldn't have designed you so that you were talking about this thing the other night where you had two eyes. One of them you could take out and move around. And look up and he's dressing. Huh?
Should I do that too?
No, I wouldn't do that. So, you could, roll it. Anyway, you could do all kinds of neat stuff.
I know what you would do.
I'd swallow.
Oh, Rob.
Rob, you probably would, Eric.
Yeah, but it'd be really awful when it came out.
It's dark in here.
You don't have to swallow a lot, would you?
Be real shitty.
See?
She is the nastiest
woman.
She is the nastiest.
No, but it's what's really is that she sort of brings it out in others. It's time for one of what? How do you do it? Yeah, there. No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. It's an impossibility. Now, what is mammon? Yeah, but what is it? Do you understand? I mean, let's really get down to it. The word mammon, as you all know, is a Chaldean word. It doesn't mean money. It's a word that means confidence. You cannot serve God and serve the things you have confidence in. Now, that tells us a secret. This isn't a should or an ought to. This is a what is. You cannot serve God and mammon. You cannot serve God and serve the things that you have confidence in the name of God. All your life up to this point has been God, by His Spirit, showing you that you shouldn't have confidence in the things you have confidence in. Right? The process or the action of getting a single eye or having a single eye is the guarantee. Once you say, Father, I'm yours. Because the Holy Spirit then can do nothing else other than show you what you don't have and shouldn't have confidence in. Now, how do you get there from here? How do you know how to act? How do you know what to do? How do you know how to be a person? Well, it tells us that too. Therefore I say unto you, take no thought for your life, what you shall eat or what you shall drink, nor yet for your body what you shall put on. Is not the life more than meat and the body than raiment? Behold the fowls of the air. Now why are we going to look at the fowls of the air? Because in a metaphor, the fowls of the air have a single eye. They are only built to do fowl stuff. Or chicken stuff. I mean, a chicken doesn't try to be anything other than a chicken. Am I communicating? So they have a single eye. That's the way God built them. What? Sit in an egg. I mean, all a chicken to do can do is do chicken stuff. All a squirrel can do is to do squirrel stuff. All a snake can do is to do snake stuff. All a rock can do is to do rock stuff. All a tree can do is to do tree stuff. It sounds silly, but it's massive. Why do all those things do what they were intended to do? Why do they walk with a single eye? Automatically. Because they don't have any self-consciousness. Which you call brains. Why is man the only one of all of the creation that has a self-consciousness? Why is man the only one of all creation that has the capacity for duality? You ever seen a tree trying to act like a chicken? Ever seen it? You know, they can only be what they are. Now God, in the first creation, the Lucifer kingdom, created a race of beings that could only be what they were. And they were, did their stuff. They became what they were intended. They ate both of the tree of knowledge, of good and evil, and of the tree of life. They were spiritualized. They now call them demons or angels. But they were created to only be able to do what they were intended to do. You understand me? They automatically had a single eye. It's like a tree. Tree's got it in spirit. A tree has a single eye. It walks. A brook has a single eye. It flows. That's its target. Now, why isn't it? Why don't you have a single eye? It's because you're evil? Yeah.
Joke.
Because God made a mistake? Well, from our standpoint, yeah. God made a mistake. From mankind's view of God, God made a mistake. You understand that? Do you agree with that? And every time you are worried about yourself, you declare to God that He made a mistake. Every time you're worried or concerned or judge someone else, you declare to God that He made a mistake. I mean, that sounds to me kind of important. God, you made a mistake. God, why'd you make me this? So what do? The instant you, that thought comes into your mind, not that you made a mistake, but that, I mean, you don't have guts to say that. But that's what, the instant you think that you should be different, then you automatically have to take your life back into your own hands, and therefore you're off the target. Therefore, at that point, your eye is double. Therefore, you have confidence in taking it back. Now, what's the difference between you and me?
I'm getting mixed up here. The sound is starting to sound, I know it's not, but it's starting to sound like double talk. He made us with self-consciousness. He made us in duality.
As long after we ate of the tree of knowledge, the fruit.
Right.
The fruit.
He didn't make a mistake. But whenever I manifest duality, then I'm saying he made a mistake.
You can escort.
It sounds like a circular argument.
Therefore, I say unto you, take no thought for your life, what you shall eat, what you shall drink, for yet for your body, what you shall put on. Is not the life more than meat, and the body more than raiment? Now, that is survival. You understand what that young time was? In the Hindi terms, or in what we've been, that is the first level of being. That's the first consciousness. That's the first chakra. That's survival. It's what you should eat, drink, put on. Survival. Now, he's saying that is the most important part. I'm not communicating. I lost all of you somewhere around here. Where did I lose you? Did I lose you on trees, huh?
I'm saying he made a mistake.
I think I'm with Harry.
I got lost on the he didn't make a mistake. I'm fucked up, but he made me that way. He didn't make a mistake. Well, I think I'm fucked up. I got lost on the. Yeah. I got lost. That's where I got lost after the tree thing and during the goddamn mistake thing.
Okay. Is that where everybody got lost?
Yeah. I thought you were getting ready to clarify it.
Well, I thought I did. I didn't. Hollicking.
Where I'm getting confused right this minute is, okay, the goal is to be single like a tree, but God made me double. So aren't I saying I want to be different? I want to be single. That's...
Hold that thought. No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. Therefore I say unto you, take no thought for your life, what you shall eat, or what you shall drink, nor yet for your body, what you shall put on. Is not the life more than meat or food, and the body more than clothing? Behold the fowls of the air, for they neither sow not, neither do they reap, nor gather into barns, yet your heavenly Father feedeth them. Are you not much better than they? And which of you by taking thought can add one cubit unto his stature? And why take you thought for clothing? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They toil not, neither do they spin. And yet I say unto you that even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. Wherefore, if God so clothe the grass of the field, which today is, and tomorrow is cast into the oven, shall he not much more clothe you, O ye of little faith? Therefore take no thought, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or wherewith shall we be clothed? For after all these things do the Gentiles seek, for your heavenly Father knoweth that you have need of all these things. But seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. Take therefore no thought for the morrow, for the morrow shall take thought for the things of itself. Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. Now that's the whole thought. And the key points of that homily are the single eye. You can't serve God and mammon. That the fowls and the lilies have the single eye. And that if you have the single eye, all the things that you desire are added unto you automatically. With no thought. Now, logic, as we understand the word, defines that that's not us. So it looks like there's a mistake. There can only be one possible answer. And that is that we were made to take thought for tomorrow. To do a thing, to do a function, to do a number. And that is back to the same thing, so that we could find out what it isn't. So that we would go through life and find out that we will have tested by antagonism everything else. And so we come to the point where we know what we shouldn't do. Am I communicating? And then the pathway of taking no thought is the automatic. I mean, I don't really give a lot of thought and concern to being quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, it really doesn't concern me. I don't anymore give any thought for, you know, that's an absurd one. But I don't give any thought now for my career. I mean, that's as foreign to me as giving thought to being quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. Why? When I was dominated and controlled by my career, why? I don't give any thought to worrying about whether or not I have the right thing to say in teaching. And yet, when I first started, I didn't want to teach because I was convinced I couldn't. Why? Why do I not give any thought to it now? The same reason that you don't give any thought to trying to, how can I say it? You don't give any thought trying to digest your food. You eat food, but you don't think about trying to digest it. Why? Why should you give thought about what you're going to do tomorrow when you don't give thought about the simplest things about how to digest your food? Is that communicating at all to you? Why do you not give thought in terms of whether or not you know how to, you know, remember when you were a little kid and you had to learn how to ride a bike? Do any of you remember that? The total and complete panic of you would be okay if you could ride a bike. Why do you not give any thought in terms of spelling or the ABCs or... Because they become part of you. You don't, it's no longer an issue.
Automatic.
Huh? It's an automatic. The key to it is, let's go to Isaiah 55 and then we'll see, we'll try to wrap this up so it'll hopefully make some sense because I feel like I'm speaking Greek.
Well, I said, it's like all of a sudden to me you're not speaking Greek, but I don't want to give the answer because the answer is it's automatic. I've learned, I've seen, it's been demonstrated over and over that my food gets digested, and when I try to do it, I can't do it, and I know I can't do it. But I don't want to give you that answer.
Ho! Ho!
Ho!
Ho. That's a good Scrabble word. Rick challenged me on ho.
You can look up Isaiah 55.
What does it mean?
And pay attention.
Hey, you guys.
Hey, you guys. Ho! Everyone that thirsteth, come ye to the waters. And he that hath no money, come ye and buy and eat. Yea, come buy wine and milk without money and without price. Wherefore do you spend money for that which is not bread? And you labor for that which satisfieth not. Hearken diligently unto me, and eat ye that which is good, and let your soul delight itself in fatness. Incline your ear, and come unto me, hear, and your soul shall live. And I'll make an everlasting covenant with you, even the sure mercies of David. We're back to a simple, simple of all simplicity. Hunger and thirst are the basic elements in your life. If you don't have food to eat and water to drink, then every other one of your career objectives and your concerns vanish. You understand? And God uses those two as the metaphor for everything else. All that is required ever and always before God is hunger. All that is required ever and always before God is thirst. In every single arena. If there is hunger and if there is thirst, you'll be satisfied without bread, without money, without effort, without labor. In every arena of your life. The only thing that God is doing in your life is creating hunger and thirst. Mm-hmm.
trying to understand.
Okay, I want you to think about, there's a myriad of things that you think are going on in your life. There's thousands and thousands of concerns. Not just you, all of us. Okay? The foundation concerns are always and ever connected with hunger and thirst. If those two aren't met, then everything else, all the others disappear. You understand that? You have never seen a man that is walking across the desert that has nothing to eat and nothing to drink worry about career objectives. You have never seen a man or a woman walking across the desert that has hungry or thirsty, that has any total, that has one iota of concern about how they look. You have not seen one who is walking across the desert, hungry and thirsty, that has any concern about their sexuality. They have no concern about whether or not they're nice. They have no concern about anything save finding hunger, sating hunger and satisfying thirst.
Unless they're sick enough to think that their sexuality is what got them stuck in the desert.
Well, but that a little while later, that'll go away. They don't care. I mean, that's why you fast. Now, I want you to see something. The promise is that if you're hungry or thirsty at the very basic core level, that God promises to satisfy it. If you're hungry or thirsty at every other level of your being, God promises to satisfy it. As automatically and without knowing it, you don't know when you are hungry. I've talked about this before, but there are five levels of malnutrition. The only thing that modern medicine knows anything about are the last two. And those are the ones in which the last stage is death, but the other stage is where there are physical manifestations that prove that you're malnourished. But there are three other levels of malnutrition that have to do with whether or not your energy level goes up and down, whether or not you're cold or warm, whether or not you're too cold all the time, whether or not you have headaches, whether or not your period is regular. I mean, the infinite number. If you didn't suffer malnutrition, you would be in perfect physical, mental, and emotional health. Am I communicating? Do you understand me? Therefore, you can be hungry without knowing it. And therefore, the purpose of preaching and the purpose of inner relationships is to show you where you're hungry before there are physical manifestations of it. Before you die physically forever. That's my only function, is to show you where you are hungry and thirsty, so that the promise of God will be realized now. Now, that is all there is to the gospel, is the admission that you're hungry and thirsty, and the promise is that He would fill it. When you take your hands off. Ho, everyone that thirsteth, come to the waters. And he that hath no money, come ye, buy and eat. Come, buy wine and milk without money, without price. Why do you spend for that which is not bread? Why do you labor for that which satisfies not? Hearken diligently unto me and eat, that ye eat ye that which is good, and let your soul delight itself in the fatness. I have to pick on Beth because it's extremely appropriate to what I'm talking about. Beth was upset at Tina and felt a weirdness when she was around Tina. And they talked and nothing happened. It was just crazy. It was just got everything weird. But the core of the reason, and Beth made certain judgments about Tina. The core that hurt Tina very badly, I have to put that in. The core of it had nothing to do with Tina. The core of it was that Beth was hungry. And she was hungry for love, approval, and acceptance. And she saw some kind of alliance that she thought between first Tina and Brenda and then Tina and I that only revealed her hunger that she needed acceptance and approval and love herself. Am I communicating? It was a hunger that was revealed that all the promises of God are that if you say you're hungry, it's met. And I say to you, to Ed, to everyone, that there are arenas where you're hungry, where you're thirsty, that you are either ashamed or afraid to admit they're true. And so you are suffering from spiritual malnutrition. That's what was happening to the body, from what I understand, while I was gone. Not because I fed you, but because my being gone revealed some areas. Harry was suffering from malnutrition in the spirit in the area of his own ability or adequacy to be in a position of leadership or service. And he had to strike out. Some of you are so hungry for acceptance, but shame or something has caused you to say, I'm not hungry. And so you articulate it. It comes out opposite what it looks like. It comes out in judgments, mostly. It comes out in anger. It comes out in frustrations. It comes out in fears. It comes out in doubt. But all it is this spiritual hunger that God is using to reveal a duality, a doubleness in your eye. So that you don't have to do that anymore. So the very thing that causes you the frustration and the shame is the thing which will produce the singleness of eye. Do you understand what I'm talking about? I guarantee you, I guess there's only one married couple here now, but every time there's a problem in a marriage, it's because of a spiritual hunger or thirst in one of the parties. Every time there's a problem between the brethren, it's to reveal that there is a hunger or a thirst in one of the people. And that will be met and processed as automatically as your food is processed internally the moment you admit you're hungry. Because, again, these levels of malnutrition. Now, again, if you are suffering from physical symptoms, your mind is automatically going to go to the physical here when I'm talking about these things, but I don't want you to. All the physical does is reveal a spiritual condition. Five levels, at least, of malnutrition. One of them ends in certain death. The other one ends in physical manifestations. These are the only two that are dealt with in the medical profession. But the three others reveal themselves in psychological conditions. Or physical, internalized physical conditions. The kind I'm talking about here is the kind when a limb drops off or something. But all those things are is a revelator of what is going on in the spirit. And their only function in you is to reveal a spiritual hunger so you can say, Father, I'm thirsty, Father, I'm hungry, and come and buy without money. You understand? And the promise is that every need will be met. The deepest needs there are, with no effort on your part. Therefore I say unto you, take no thought for tomorrow. For that's all the Gentiles seek. But we take thought for tomorrow so we don't have to admit the spiritual malnutrition of today. That's the only reason mankind takes thought for tomorrow. Do you understand that? I mean, period, flat, period. So don't worry about whether or not you take thought for tomorrow. That's the symptom. The symptom reveals the deeper problem. The deeper problem is malnutrition today. Okay, now did I close the circle on this?
Yeah, that was great. No, I didn't understand at all. That made me forget.
I forgot how to do it when I was in Germany.
No, just the eyes.
Okay. The goal is to be like, again, the word is walk. It's not a goal, it's a certainty. It's here now. You don't have to worry about it. The goal, it's a tree grows, a brook flows, a rock hangs around. Fowls.
Boy, do they.
A lily, lilies.
Chickens are bad.
But that's the automatic of their identity. That's what's set before you. Do you understand? It's impossible for a chicken to think about tomorrow. They sort of cluck around today.
With their heads chopped off.
But think about these things. Think about the spiritual malnutrition. And whenever, every attempt, every time you are compelled to take thought for tomorrow, it simply reveals the malnutrition of today. Amen? Mm-hmm. Take it, big guy.